Blog Talk Radio.
Aloha, welcome to Talking Pictures. As always, your host, Paul Booth. I'm here, ready, pumped, psyched to talk movies, talk film festivals, talk art, life, whatever comes across the table. There is no rules here. There's no censorship. We are excited today because we received an announcement about a new streaming service that launches today titled Chopso. It's for Asian American content, Asian content, English speaking content, kind of a way to bridge the gap with cultures and film. We were given this by our friend, our associate, our brother, Mr. Jonah Bleckman, who is one of the pillars of why Talking Pictures is up here at episode 255. Let me see. I think we have our guest with us real quick.
Hi.
Welcome. Are you with us?
Yes, I am.
And so I don't pronounce it wrong, respectfully, how do you like to, how's your name pronounced?
Koji Stephen Sakai.
Okay, cool. I've had guests on where I've just totally boofed it, and then, you know, they've called me nicely after the show, and I always feel so bad, so I just like to ask people so it's there,
no
and
problem.
It doesn't make me, yeah, you know. Yeah,
even though my name's really hard, I can't pronounce anybody's name.
This is, first of all, what you guys were doing, of course. You know, we get these great synopses and EPKs, and then I always think, you know, I go through them to do my research, but then I always get so bugged by talk show hosts who start talking more about the product than the creator of the product. And it's like, okay, you have an EPK, which Jonah is a very good friend of ours, but it's like, how about the intent of what it is comes from the guy who created the intent? So I was explaining to people some of the films, just two or three things I wanted to mention before I got into having you start out how you'd like to explain this, is when I went to the homepage, you actually have the first feature film that I ever produced, Blood of the Samurai.
Really? That's great.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, and well, no, I was kind of tripping out because I was like going through it to do my research, and I was like, hey, wait a minute. I'm like, something I made is on this site. So this is kind of a little nice little universal gift to get to do this. Of course, that was made in 2000. So this is cool that you are keeping voices from no matter how far back alive. People I've slept with saw that at the Hawaii International Film Festival in 2010. One of the funniest comedies I've ever seen. I can't believe I forgot about it. I saw the logo today and I just went, I don't know how I don't own that movie. So
thank you.
Before I go off into my movie lover talk, and we'll come back to a couple of things that I checked out, let's start it out with, like I said, I have it in writing, but what's your initial intent here behind Chopso, and congratulations on the release today.
Thank you. As a filmmaker myself, you know, one of the biggest issues with making films, especially when they feature Asian people, Asian Americans in particular, is that there's really no place to kind of show them. Traditional distribution channels are just not interested in content that features Asians or is about Asian Americans. So Quentin Lee and I, my partner, really wanted to create a platform where people who look like myself or tell stories like myself, about people like myself, I should say, could stream their stuff. So shorthand, I tell people we're basically the Asian American Netflix. We are, we feature, you know, features, shorts, documentaries, narrative, podcast, music, experimental stuff, and everything in between those.
Well, that was what I enjoyed most because I am I'm also a filmmaker myself, and I do this because literally one of the co-creators of the show said, "You like movies and you never shut up, so start a talk show." So I thought, well, that really is a great idea, because I really could. I think my longest time is like a 6.5 hour movie conversation. But anyway,
wow. Because
I love what you're saying about Netflix, because it's like I have Netflix and I have Prime and I have a couple of Prime channels, and then I have this library service. And so it's like I really was thinking the other day, like, do I really need to have 6 different streaming services? But anyways, I loved when I read this from Jonah. This is actually something we've never done on the show, and not because Netflix doesn't need it or Prime doesn't need it. It was something that sparked me because your guys' intent is the intent of this show, which is, yesterday we had a first time like college filmmaker on, and the guest before was an Emmy nominee this year, and has a very, very known Marvel movie that she was a cinematographer of coming out. So it was like bridging, the way you're saying there's not a place for Asian films or content, or it's like we wanted to find a way to say you don't have to work for Marvel or be Brad Pitt to be on a talk show. You just have to have something that's entertaining and that we liked, and you can come on. So when I read that that's what your intent was, I thought it was fantastic. What I was wondering was, because I saw you're a partner with the Vancouver Asian Film Festival, which I did attend one year when our film played. Is there anything you could tell us? How did this go about? Because I know San Diego Asian Film Festival has a great thing. And like you were saying, it does get overshadowed by San Diego Film Festival. Well, I said that, but what kind of process was this to, picking the content, since some of this content goes back 17 years?
Well, actually, some of the content even goes further than that. To take a step back, one of the things that Quentin and I realized was that there has been content for, over 40 years that we've been looking at, we've seen, that nobody else has seen, though, unfortunately. And some of the content's really great. Some's not so great, but some's really great, and we think more people should see it. And obviously, so one of the things with Chop So was to really be a place where not only can they see new stuff, but also stuff that happened 30, 40 years ago. And as far as the kind of film festival, as I've gotten older, I'm 40 years old now, and I have a kid. And I used to go to every Asian American Film Festival. I used to watch every movie. But now with a kid, it's almost impossible to do that. If I see one or two movies in a film festival, I'm really lucky. And so the problem is with a lot of these movies, they're not going to get the traditional distribution. So I'm not going to see them on Prime. I'm not going to see them on Netflix or Hulu or anywhere really. And so unfortunately, I just never get to see them. And so one of the things that Quentin and I wanted to do here was to create a platform that we could see those movies, even if we don't get a chance to see them at a film festival. So one of the things that we knew right away is we wanted to partner with these film festivals to be able to expand their network so people could see these movies. And I think, the festivals themselves are going through kind of a tough time where they're trying to figure out what they're going to be in the next 10, 15, 20 years as more and more people don't go to the theaters. That this idea of a festival is changing, right? And the idea of going into a movie theater and actually watching something is changing. Because I actually, in a lot of ways, prefer watching it on my phone, or at home, or as I take a bath, as opposed to drive out and go sit, wait in line, and then all that stuff, and that's a lot of work.
Yeah, that's an interesting question for, you're obviously, you like it enough to start a streaming service. Is that I was one of those guys. I'm only 38, but I just somehow, my love of certain films or music or my opinions, my dad will look at me and say, stop talking like you're in your 60s. And and I really have that thing, like, where streaming came out, I was so mad because I was like, no, I want the seats. I want the communal experience. I want the, You know, if something like when I saw Brokeback Mountain, I literally don't remember who I was before I walked in the movie theater. And I never had an issue with gay, whatever. I never had an issue with if the filmmaker was angry or whatever. But I just remember thinking this was such an experience of where somebody would say, I'm not going to watch an Asian director. Someone would say, I'm not going to watch Heath Ledger and Jake Gyllenhaal kissing. And I walked out as brokenhearted as if I had seen a regular love story. And I remember thinking, this is truly amazing. So that aspect for me, and of course, like you're saying, there's so much work to go to the film. That's the only thing that I miss about streaming is you have that powerful experience, but then you're not kind of looking around and going, okay, well, those people were talking before the movie. Now they're not talking. So how did that movie, you know, maybe mess something up in them emotionally? So go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, I mean, I think there always be the theatrical experience. I mean,
right.
But what's happening more is that they're just being dominated more by the studio system, by their movies. And this idea that you're kind of an independent filmmaker, needs to go theatrical. Like the traditional model was theatrical. Then you kind of get a deal. Then you go DVD. Then you go TV. That whole model doesn't really work anymore for kind of the filmmakers that aren't Sony, Warner Brothers. And I think that, you know, looking at these kind of streaming services, they're ways for us to reach out directly to a consumer, you know, and being able to really not have to kind of go through this traditional model. Because the traditional models, as you know, is very much about, they want the X-Men, they want the Spider-Mans, and they're not really interested in even adult dramas anymore or adult, you know, comedies really. I guess they're still interested in adult comedies, but very few kind of movies that aren't Superman, that aren't X-Men, which I love.
Right.
Don't get me wrong. I love going to the theater. I love watching the movies too, but in a lot of ways, I have a nephew and niece, and they don't even go to movie theaters. They don't watch TV on a TV. Everything they watch, all the content they watch, is on their phones. And I have a feeling that a lot of the content now, especially those kids now, that's how they're viewing things, which is really weird to me because I love watching TV on my phone, but at some point I like watching on my big screen TV too.
Right. Well, you know, that's an interesting concept, and you'll especially get this as a filmmaker, but I was interviewing one time for Hawaii Film and Video Magazine, Fade and Papa Michael, ASC, the, of course, Alexander Payne cinematographer, and he shot Walk the Line and Pursuit of Happiness. And he had said to me, we're not understanding how to create an aspect ratio for something the size of your hand. our lenses are to capture this much or what we want right here. And it was just really interesting because he said, now we're these guys that have spent 30 years on 35 and we know we can go to 70 and we can, and of course Nebraska was that blown up 35 or whatever. And so it is an interesting thing. What I wanted to do, if it's okay with you, I wanted to talk about the film via text with Lin Chen, which of course what you were saying really interested me about people and there not being a place for the content, because this great time that I spent researching was me having the awakening of, I remember loving this film, the people I've slept with so much. How did it leave my brain? I'm not racist. I don't care. I could care less if somebody's purple and has no legs. As long as they're nice, I'm going to be nice. And I'm thinking, this is kind of what the lesson that's coming to me. And then, so I see this film via text, and I'm someone who, you know, just hates text. I think it ruins friendships. It ruins business stuff. I was with a girl 7 years. She actually dumped me in an email. And it was just like this. Yeah. Well, sorry. I didn't mean to turn it into the therapy hour. No, but that's what films are here for. Right. But this film via text, I'm just talking about this film. There's going to be a few films that I'm going to discuss because I want you guys to check this site out. I, I spent time going through it and checking out some shorts. And this film via text, if you're going to start writing down some lists or creating a list, put that one on there. Anybody can relate to it, whether it's friendship, boyfriend, girlfriend. Another one, this Canadian film, I wanted to know how you found it. This animation film, Yellow Sticky Notes.
Yes.
How did you find it?
So I used to be a programmer at the Japanese American National Museum for over 15 years. And one of the things that I did over there was just constantly find new things. And one of the things in the community that's really growing and changing is this idea of Hapa, or mixed people of mixed ancestry. So usually half Asian and half something else. And so it's becoming a bigger and bigger thing that's happening in the Japanese American community. And so we were doing a lot of days around, or programs around, the Hapa issue. And so one of the things that I had to kind of research and find were these filmmakers who were making projects around that issue. And one of the first people I came through was Jeff Chivas-Turner. He was making these really amazing projects in Canada, looking at kind of this issue of being biracial or multiracial. And so, you know, those films, The Yellow Sticky Notes, are just these amazing projects that kind of tell the story of being multi-ethnic in Canada, but I think a lot of it could be related to what's going on here in America. And can I say one thing about the people I slept with real quick, by the way?
Well, if you're talking about the film, no, sorry.
Yeah.
Couldn't pass that
not
one out.
Literally, no, people I slept with, yeah. Well, actually, you know, one of the funny things about that movie is that because the lead was Asian American, the female lead was Asian American, it was basically pegged as an Asian American movie, despite the fact that there's really nothing that says as Asian American other than the fact that the lead is Asian. And so it really,
right,
in a lot of ways, it hurt the movie, you know, in terms of distribution, in terms of going a lot of places. I mean, you got picked up mostly because of Wilson Cruz, who's a really
well-known
actor.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's got Wilson Cruz,
gay actor,
who's, like,
right,
done The West Wing and Grey's Anatomy.
Yeah. And so, you know, what's interesting is that movie was really hurt by the fact that it was Asian, and that's the kind of projects that we're really looking at for Chop Suey, which is we want these projects that didn't get the distribution that it should have gotten because of the fact that it just happened to have an Asian person in it. And really, that's kind of, and now, I mean, and the people I slept with is actually, for a while, was very difficult to find. It wasn't streaming on Netflix anymore. It was kind of just off the table. And now, you know, by being on platforms like Chop Suey, it's on other platforms, by the way, but being on platforms like Chop Suey, it allows me to see it and to remember it and hopefully like it. And I'm glad you like it, by the way. Thank you.
Oh, it's totally. Wait, were you one of the co-directors?
I wrote and produced it.
Oh. Okay, I'm glad you just told me that. Otherwise, this would have just turned into an episode talking about that film. So thank you, because I stay on par, but every once in a while, because just, you know, we really want this show to just feel like you and I are in a coffee shop talking. We don't want it to be, you know, Charlie Rose, Larry King. It has to be all sitting and you have to be wearing a suit. And so, yes, that is just an absolutely brilliant film. And I really, when I saw the logo, I mean, I don't remember how I even, and please, if it was somehow not proper, I apologize. I think because I knew the Hawaii International Film Festival so well, I mean, our film had won it and I had worked with them and curated events, that I think one of the programmers gave me a DVD. I showed my family and then sent it back. It was like, I liked it that much. I was like, I just have to find a way to show this to my family and then just immediately get it back to the festival. So I'm sorry if that violates, I know, filmmaker code, but I feel it's also kind of a compliment.
I'm really just happy that you watched it and showed it to other people. I mean, that's the most important thing. I mean, and that's everything we're trying. It's just, we want people to see these movies, right? That's the most important thing, for sure.
Yeah, this is, and then there was another one, which, my gosh, especially in today's climate in the world, again, we're talking about Chop Suey, this new streaming service that launched today, shorts, documentaries, features, the people I've slept with via text is something you should put as your starting point. No, actually, you should put my first feature as your starting point now. Racial facial. Here's another one that I needed to know where it came from. This was an absolutely brilliant concept. How this one come to you? What was the initial concept, or what was your initial impact with you for this one?
Jeff Adachi is a filmmaker, and he's a prosecutor in San Francisco. And he did another documentary called Slanted Screen about Asian American male actors. And that's another one I screened at the Japanese American National Museum. And I just thought it was an amazing movie. And it was a really important movie to kind of see the history of Asian Americans on the big screen, or in film and entertainment, I should say. And that was my first introduction to Jeff. And as I got to know Jeff, I kind of saw his other movies, his other documentaries, and Racial Facial was one of those. And, you know, I was just blown away by his ability to both be a lawyer and make money and be a filmmaker and telling these important stories that frankly nobody else is telling out there, really.
Well, yeah, this was really what I enjoyed about it was I had watched via text, and then I had watched Yellow Sticky Notes because it said Canadian. You had mentioned the word Hapa. I'm from Hawaii, so I totally know the, like, when you have six ethnicities. I have a white dad and a Mexican mother, so even I understand how sometimes I'm out and just everybody thinks it's open mic night for Mexican jokes around me because they don't know I'm Mexican. And then I'm around Mexicans and they start speaking Spanish to me and I have to say, oh, I don't speak Spanish. But Racial Facial was, you know, this isn't a spoiler. I think it's something that everybody needs to take the time to watch. It really just came on this awesome concept of really kind of putting in your face, literally, how it, I mean, I already know I don't really believe in race. And sometimes people question me saying that and go, oh, you don't respect a culture. And I go, no. I just think we're all humans. I don't need to say that you're black. I don't need to say that you're Chinese. I don't need to say that this, you know, to me, and again, no disrespect whatsoever. It's like I always say, spaghetti is the same thing as pad thai. It's just a different sauce. And I'm Italian. So, you know, so with this, when I was seeing these films, I thought this is awesome because I went to film school in Canada. It has films that I saw in Hawaii, and then it has this thing about race, which I don't believe in, but it's showing the history and giving the appreciation of the people who don't judge based on race. So that leads me to the question of what is kind of the criteria or elimination process for what goes into a project like this?
Film specific,
yeah, not the intent of the channel. Like,
sure. I mean, this was a lot of conversations between Quentin and I about, you know, what kind of films should be on here, what kind of films shouldn't be on here. One of the early criteria that we came up with was Asian people, because we're both passionate about Asian American issues and Asian American film. But then we started thinking about, you know, it's very limiting. Asian Americans are a very limiting term because what if you're in Canada, or what if you're in New Zealand or Malaysia, Singapore? So then we started thinking, well, you know, it should be open. It should be open to kind of more than just Asian Americans, but kind of Asian people all over the world. But then we realized right away that there are other streaming sites that are dealing with Asian content in its native language. So there's one about K-dramas, Korean dramas. There's one about anime. There's, you know, there's others out there, and frankly, we just can't compete with them. And they're very good at what they do. So we started thinking about, you know, we should focus on movies that we're making, the kind of movies that we're making, I should say. So we started looking at movies that feature Asians in front of the camera and sometimes behind the camera as well. And English is really the big thing. We're open to movies that are not totally in English, obviously, but that's our main focus, is kind of Asian movies in English. And then from there, we just watch the movies as we get them, and we kind of think, we ask ourselves, is this something we want to watch? Is this something that we think our viewers would want to watch? And then if it is, we kind of put it on there. We definitely try to be diverse with our programming in terms of, we don't want all features, we don't want all, you know, shorts, but we want kind of a mix and genre mix as well. So we're really proud right now that we're having, you know, we have the romantic comedies to the horrors to the very, very experimental kind of stuff, and even web series or podcasts or kind of, we're really excited about kind of the diversity of programming.
Oh, yes. And we'll jump into it once we wrap the film part. There's also a news button you can click on that I'll click on and then tell the audience a little bit about. I really liked something that I thought you did that was brilliant. I wanted to commend you on the marketing was the How I Won an Oscar with Chris Tashima. I am not one of those people who, I mean, you know the deal. I say a guest is on that's an Emmy nominee. It's because we know audience, marketing, et cetera. But we know at the end of the day, we're all just filmmakers. We love the ins and outs. We love the headaches. We love the, you know, putting Tylenol in our food or whatever. And wherever you're at, you know, if you're married and your wife's cool with it, or if you have a girlfriend, then you're arguing twice a week. And it's just such a fun process. It's just so great to just meet people and just, you know, one day your film's working, the next day it's not. And so I thought this is interesting because I had the way you guys went with that. So what I wanted to know was that a documentary that you guys created for the channel?
Yes. It was definitely something. Chris is one of our brand ambassadors. And Chris, I mean, it's amazing, but, you know, that's probably one of the only, as far as I know, it's the only Asian American that's ever won that award or won anything, any Oscar in terms of a story about an Asian person from an Asian American filmmaker. So we thought it was a really important project, and we thought it was a really important person to get kind of into the company and to really have him express why Chop Suey is really important. But yeah, it's an important story too. The movie that he created, which is about Sugihara, which he was the diplomat from Lithuania who saved thousands of Jewish people who were fleeing the Nazis.
Wow. Now I'm even more intrigued because back in September I was in Berlin and my brother-in-law grew up on the other side of the wall and was taking me around and showing me where there's still parts of the wall and sniper towers. And you want to talk about being humbled before you can even take the next breath. So I really commend what you guys are doing because, of course, as we're conditioned, you know, we think that the only Asian director is Ang Lee. I don't
and
take
Justin
anything
Lin.
Away from. Pardon?
Justin Lin's another one. He's the
right. And it's, you know, and I mean, Life of Pi made me black out because I loved it so much, and I had just lost my dog. So when the tiger walked away from him, I had to watch the movie a second time to know what happened because it hit me so hard. It was like his animal left him, like my dog just died suddenly one day. But anyways, so again, you guys are going to want to check out that documentary. It's really cool. And I love how, and I know it wasn't staged, that this filmmaker didn't immediately go to his Oscar. He discussed humanitarian awards, which we all know are, at the end of the day, more important. I mean, hey, who's going to turn down an Oscar sitting on their shelf? But we should be working to improve the world. And I'm not getting on my soapbox. Okay, so now, this is what I thought was totally cool. When it said news, I was just thinking it was a cool way of saying what's coming out. Here's what you have on Netflix. We don't have to read... not saying you guys are gossip. Netflix would post Hollywood gossip. None of these sites have that. I think Amazon Prime, you know, they have that trivia thing. You can click on trivia during a scene. But what gave you the, and I love that you have an article about the Vancouver Asian Film Festival, because I got the experience of playing there, and it was in the theater that was my favorite theater in film school. So I got to see my film on with my film school buddies at our favorite theater. But what was the idea for this and the direction that you want this to go?
Well, actually, before we started CHOPSA, Quentin Lee had a blog called Popolis, which was really kind of looking at Asian American issues of the day as a blog. And when we first started kind of conceiving of CHOPSA, we thought that there needed to be kind of the ability to talk about the filmmakers, to talk about the movies, but also talk about the issues of the day, and really kind of be a part of the conversation. So not just to be a passive, like, here are a bunch of movies, but also to put our point of view on things, to be able to say what we like and what we don't like, and, you know, and talk about whatever hot button issue, whether it's whitewashing or a movie comes out from a studio and they don't cast diversely. So that's kind of what we were really thinking of is being kind of a voice, adding a voice to the internet, which I know will get lost, but ultimately for our viewers, for our subscribers, it adds a little value, we hope.
Well, this is what I like about this is that when I was in, like I see one of your guys' articles, Where Are All the Asian Rock Stars, was that when I was walking away from the Berlin Wall Museum, I saw this guy sitting in front of a cafe, and he was just sitting with his guitar playing the blues. And I mean, obviously every guitar player has listened to Jimi Hendrix too much, but he just had this amazing tone. And I thought, what if maybe his grandfather was from East Berlin, or what if maybe he had, you know, family member. And I thought, you know, like, that's, you know, blues. And it was just, I thought, this guitarist is just sitting here on a corner in Berlin where people drink their coffee and tea. And like, this is better than half the stuff I hear on American radio. So I'm sure that's just a problem for so many countries because America just runs the market. But I wanted to commend you guys on adding this. You know, sometimes I don't know where guests stand, but just please pardon my language in saying cojones. You know, people think associate the word balls as bad. I don't mean any disrespect saying it on your podcast or your show, but I love the guts of it, the bravado to just do your thing, to put it out there. These are, you know, you guys got some really fantastic stuff here. I mean, I'm going to spend some time after the show thinking why I even forgot about your guys' film, People I've Slept With. As we run into our last 10 or 11 minutes here, since you are a filmmaker, this is a side question from CHOPSA. Is there a genre that your genre that you would have to make? You have your money, you have your budget. We ask all guests this question, that our filmmakers. You have perfect budget, perfect script, perfect everything. What's the genre you make?
Wow. I thought you were going to ask me what the story is. Let me think. I mean, horror is where my heart is. I mean, that's the movies I tend to watch at home, the movies I really want to go see in movie theaters. So it'd probably be a horror movie.
Okay, a horror movie. Okay. You know, what's really interesting is we get the last, I started this about 12 guests ago, we get everyone saying sci-fi or horror. Or one said, I just don't define genres. I just like it. I just would be telling a story. So with that, I'm sorry. I should have pretensed that we throw that question at every guest that's made a film.
No, yeah, no problem.
So with that, I want to kind of give you, 'cause there was a few more things on the EPK. I want to just give you a few minutes of an open floor to say anything else that we didn't get to. I mean, obviously we didn't cover everything. So what is any key points that were in your mind that you would like to share with the audience?
Sure. I mean, one of the things I'm really proud of is working with different organizations as well. So two of the places that we're working with is one is the Japanese American National Museum, which I used to work at. But, you know, one of the things that really depressed me when I worked there was they would make these amazing documentaries that nobody saw unless you were actually at the museum on the day they'd happen to screen it. Documentaries about, you know, 9/11 and the connection of Japanese Americans to what happened in Pearl Harbor, to Boyle Heights, which is a neighborhood here in Los Angeles that features is very diverse back before the war. We had Latinos, obviously it had Japanese Americans, Russians, and Jewish people. And it was a very kind of vibrant, very interesting community. So they make these amazing documentaries that unfortunately nobody ever gets to see. And so I'm really proud that we're going to be hosting these kind of documentaries. So more people, not just here in America, but around the world. So that's one of the partners. And the other partner that we're working with is an organization called Hatch Fund. They're a crowdfunding site but unlike Kickstarter or Indiegogo, they're a nonprofit. So we really like working with them because, you know, we're kind of the end of the game, right? We're the distribution side, but we knew that there's a problem with funding, that a lot of the projects that we would want are struggling to find funding. And a lot of the filmmakers, the problem with when they go through crowdfunding is that it's not tax, you know, it's not a nonprofit. It's not a tax write-off for the people who are putting money in, and Hatch Fund is. So we're definitely working with them to really to kind of do both sides, right? The beginning of the project. So those are the two partners that we're really proud to be working with. And the other thing that I think is really important, and that one of the reasons why we started the program, was to really look at kind of the international distribution. So right now there's really no market for Asian English content outside the United States. Even in the United States, there's no market for it, but there's especially no market outside the United States. And that's because traditional distribution, it never really made sense that, you know, say 500 people in France are interested in an Asian American project. That's just not enough people to kind of go through the DVD route and kind of go through that whole thing. But streaming services like this, that's perfect. 500 people in France is perfect. And so as we kind of create this kind of distribution around the world, we're hoping that it'll help all the filmmakers who are making this kind of content as we kind of start to identify who these audiences are and who the projects are. And I'll stop talking because I feel like I'm talking a lot.
No. There's never, it's like I said, we're having coffee. It's just that we're recording it and people are going to hear it. The Los Angeles Asian Pacific Film Festival is one I covered one year for a newspaper I wrote for. And I saw a couple of films. One was called Hang Loose. One was called, Losing Paradise. They were Hawaii filmmakers because I'm from Hawaii. And so I think that was part of where in doing work with the Hawaii International Film Festival, I think that's where part of why when I said I don't like to say a race or whatever is because in Hawaii you have Tongans and Samoans and Filipinos and Hawaiians and Chinese and Japanese and you kind of just start not noticing. And that was the great thing, like you're saying, that the Hawaii International Film Festival is another one where you see these amazing Asian films. Obviously the people I've slept with is the example we can use. And then, like you're saying, I don't hear about it for 7 years. Comes across my brain again. I saw it instantly. I was very respectfully the actress was gorgeous and I was just dumb and going through a breakup when I saw it. And I just remember thinking, like you were saying, it's not really what would be called a quote unquote Asian film. It's just a comedy and it's funny and Wilson Cruz is great. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, on that film, you know, what's really great is we applied to Sundance and they said it was too commercial for what they're doing. And all I could think was, where are we supposed to film, where are we supposed to screen this movie if it's too commercial? You know, like it was a really fascinating, you know, kind of conversation, because it was kind of odd in that, like, I think that what they wanted an Asian filmmaker to write about was this kind of, you know, really like identity heavy piece about the struggles of being a minority in this country. But our film wasn't that at all. And so it's very interesting. And that's one of the struggles with any of these kind of content, not just my movie, but all these movies, is that, you know, we make these identity pieces, which are important. Right. But also if you make pieces that aren't identity, because I also like movies where Asian people are just normal people, right? Quote, normal people. They're not like talking about being incarcerated or having people be racist against them. They just happen to be Asian. Those are important too. And there's just, unfortunately, the way the market is, there's just no place for that content, you know? And one of the things that actually, as the movies become global, you know, now when you see diversity, you're seeing, you know, because they want us to play in China, obviously, because it's such a big market. They get Chinese stars. So the Asian American people who are here aren't even getting those roles because the Chinese people want the Chinese stars in there. You know, even as it becomes global, we think, oh, they're becoming more global, there's more Asians, and there are more Asians, but they're not the kind of Asians that are living here in the United States. And so it's a very different group of people.
Right, exactly. Yeah, it's unfortunately, we've come down to our last couple of minutes. We of course want to thank you for your time, as I said, and again, we respect anyone who's doing something to further film and take any kind of film further and bring it to more people and not treat it like it's just a product, like a watch that someone sells. And with that, if there's a minute, if you have any final words before I do my wrap.
Yeah, the last thing I'd say is a lot of people talk about, you know, wanting to change the industry, and everyone always complains about it. But I think it's really important that we all try to push and be creative and create new platforms to get more people to see these projects. So I'm total agreement with you.
Excellent. Well, thank you. And again, that's Chopso, and that launched today. So you guys are fired up and ready and going, right? Chopso.org. And you can check that out. I would say do it now, but I always tell people to finish listening to the show. So thank you again for joining us today. I am very happy that Jonah brought this across our table, and we wish you guys the best. And please know, anybody who ever comes on the show is instantly invited back as a return guest. Unless you hang up the phone and say, why did I talk to that guy? You're welcome to come back. You know, 6 months down the road, you want to talk about some new stuff that's going on with Chopso, or you have something else you want to talk, or you want to just come sit in a panel episode that we do, feel free to let us know, tell Jonah to let us know, or if Jonah has permission to give you my info if you want it. And, you know, we're behind what you're doing. So thank you for calling in.
Thank you for having me.
All right. You have a great day.
You too. Thanks. Bye.
Bye. And that was a wonderful conversation with Mr. Koji Steven Sakai. We were talking about Chopso. This is something you got to check out. I had a blast watching this morning. Again, via text, the people I've slept with, sticky notes. Lots going on. Get on there. Check it out. That's going to do it for today's episode. I'm going to say my usual. You know, let's face it. The ending of the show is never going to change. Whether it's morning, afternoon, or night, or any other time of day you can find, make sure and watch a good movie today. Aloha. We send our love to New York. But most of all, please spread some peace today. Take care.